The second case on today's oral argument calendar is number A19-440, Bruce Olson versus Commissioner of Public Safety. Mr. Lucas, you may approach. Please identify yourself for the audio record, and then you may begin.
Good morning. John Lucas on behalf of appellant Bruce Olson. In this case, the district court and the commissioner, the respondent in this matter, err in the following manner. They say it's all been decided before, and it's not. And that's where they're wrong. This is new. This has not been decided before. So I'll walk quickly a few steps that the court has seen in this category in the past. First, there's a question about whether, for admissibility purposes, whether the state has to be within a certain margin of error, and that was rejected by the courts. And margin for error is not really even a scientific term. But what was understood in the creation of the Data Master, this newer technology that came out a few years ago, is the argument began that there is an uncertainty of measurement in every measuring device, and it's knowable, and it should be analyzed in evidence. So an argument was made that the state shouldn't be allowed to introduce the test result on the Data Master unless they can prove the uncertainty of measurement. That was rejected because the court said that's just speculation. You're speculating that if we knew this uncertainty of measurement, then we have a different result.
In which case are you referring to when you say that was rejected?
I'm not positive what case that is, but it's a case that goes against my argument, and I think it's the McIntyre case specifically.
I think McIntyre was the recent unpublished opinion of this court. I think that had to do with the merits of the revocation, not admissibility.
Correct. And I'm not arguing admissibility. That's the point I'm getting to, is I'm not here
not,
to
not
say
admissibility of the test result of,
right.
of the commissioner's evidence.
That's right. That's not what I'm arguing here. So I think most of the arguments have been about whether they have to reach some higher scientific standard to get the result admitted. I'm not arguing about that. And I'm not asking for speculation because as you walk down through the cases that we've heard argued in district court and the very few that have been argued in the appellate courts, is we didn't know what the uncertainty of measurement was for this specific device and this specific test. And the department, what they did at the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension is they refused to even find that information out for years. And then they decided that they should, that for scientific standards nationwide to certify this device, they should be able to know the uncertainty of measurement.
And just so we're clear, I mean, this information you're conveying now was part of your proffer, I think, right? There's no actual evidence in the record, but this is what you've proffered to the court, to the district court.
Right, and at the implied consent hearing, I had a scientist, not my scientist, I had their scientist from the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension to testify about what the uncertainty of measurement was in this test with this device, this specific serial number in this machine. And so we are no longer saying to the courts, we should have this information, and if we had it, the test result might be different. The courts are saying, well, that's not good enough. You're asking us to speculate. Now, we actually know what the uncertainty of measurement is, because no measurement device can ever be exact. We can't know what my client's actual alcohol concentration was. But we know a range within the uncertainty of measurement because that's what's scientifically reliable. So a court could decide it any way a court wants to decide it. They just need to hear that information. They need to hear that evidence.
Why does the court need to hear that evidence in a license revocation case?
Because the state's evidence is speculation. They are saying it's 0.16. Everybody in the scientific community knows that's false. Everyone in the scientific community, I'm just going to pick numbers, know that the real alcohol concentration of this person was somewhere between, say, 0.158 and 0.163. We know that. So when we talk about speculation, it's actually them. It's the respondents that are asking these judges to speculate that their number is correct, when we know that that number is not knowable. So a range is notable, and it's absolutely scientifically valid. And so a judge could say, you know what, Mr. Lucas, I'm going to demand that every number within that range be over 0.16 or over 0.08. And that's the only way I'm going to decide it. Or a judge could say, you know what, 90% of the numbers within that range are above the legal limit. That's good enough for me. I'm going to sustain the revocation. Or it could say it's only 75%. That's not good enough. A judge can have the actual information. And what boggles the mind is why, what are we afraid of? I mean, why would a judge not want to know that information? Because
well,
then
counsel,
a judge can decide.
Let's look at the statute that governs the hearing at issue in this case. And 169A.53, subdivision 3. And paragraph B10, paragraph B says the scope of the hearing is limited to the issues in clauses 1 through 12. And 10 says, was the testing method used valid and reliable, and were the test results accurately evaluated?
Yes.
So what does the phrase test results accurately evaluated mean in your view?
To me, it means the uncertainty of measurement, because I'm not saying that this methodology is flawed. I'm not saying that the officer didn't conduct the test in its proper way, but how is it accurately evaluated? It's
what
only
does the term
accurately
evaluated mean? It sounds to me you're getting more toward your argument goes to the reliability of the testing device itself and the results that come from it, assuming that it was accurately administered. How does that term evaluated, how does your argument fit in with the term evaluated? How is it relevant to whether the results were accurately evaluated?
Because the data master itself will tell the court what the range of uncertainty of measurement is. It will do its job, and it will accurately evaluate. I'm presuming that. I'm not a scientist, but I'm presuming that it will do that. But it will only do that if it tells the judge the actual data. And the actual data is the uncertainty of measurement range. It can't say, well, we're doing this because what's accepted here is that we use a formula and it spits out a solid number. We know scientifically that's not a way to accurately evaluate the evidence. The accuracy has to be
that is the test result, right?
That is the test result that we're talking about, yes, but it's not accurately evaluated. The result is what the, you know, the device does what it does, and it gives us a result. And then it spits out a number, and that's the evaluation of it, but that's not really, that's not the proper evaluation. The proper evaluation is what was the range of the uncertainty of measurement. And so
I think what you're saying is it's not a complete explanation, or it's not as thorough. You have more information about the test result that you would like to convey to the district court.
Yes, and why not? I mean, it says that the driver can challenge this, how the accuracy of it.
So I want to turn your attention to a different statute, the statute that governs the commissioner's obligation to revoke a license. It's 0.52 sub 4. The key clause is the commissioner shall revoke the person's license or permit to drive, but there's two predicates. You're familiar with them, obviously. The first one is probable cause. The second one is, quote, the person submitted to a test and the test results indicate an alcohol concentration of 0.08 or more. And then, of course, later on, there's the clause about twice the limit. But so the commission, so presumably, I'm presuming, I mean, the police police agency here did the data master test. I'm assuming they did not ask the BCA for more of this statistical probability information, but the police agency simply sent proper forms to the commissioner. The commissioner did not seek this information from the BCA. The commissioner relied upon the police agency's certification, and then revoked. I mean, so the isn't the question then whether the second predicate is satisfied? The person submitted to a test and the test results indicate an alcohol concentration of 0.16 or more. And well, if that's the question,
right,
why does the district judge need to know all of the statistical probability information that you would like to present?
Because I don't think we can have a system where we want to create extra work, right? I mean, we don't want to create extra expense and work. We don't expect the police officer to seek out that information. But the department has that information at its fingertips.
Which department?
Yes, the Department of Public Safety.
I understood the BCA has the information.
Yes, they do. And the department has access to that. That's who they use. That's their an arm of the state. And, you know, it used to be different, but now when you get a data master result, when you get a printout, on the data master printout itself, it says right there, for uncertainty of measurement information, contact the BCA at this website. They are not only calculating the uncertainty of measurement, they're telling the drivers that if you want this information, you can get it from us. It's a snap to get it.
Is that in the record in this case?
It is. That device is, it says it right on the printout.
I mean, that's in the district court record.
I believe that it is. And counsel can correct me if I'm wrong, but I do believe that that was submitted as well as an exhibit, the test result.
Okay, so, what was the range you said should be applied to this test?
Whatever it is, in the particular case, I'm not saying that this court needs to itself today establish what that range should be. If I was a judge, I would say I want 100% of that range to be above 0.16.
100%.
Because it's an unknowable amount. So why?
But those data master confidence intervals can give you a percentage. Like for example, 80% of the results will be above X number.
Sure.
So, and this is a preponderance of the evidence standard that's applied to this process. So why 100%? That seems to be inconsistent with the preponderance of the evidence standard and the statistical information you get from the confidence intervals.
Because the statistical information is just that. It doesn't tell us this particular person.
But,
it doesn't
but
say that.
Aren't you then asking the court to speculate?
No, they are asking the court to speculate. What we're saying is get the information and then decide.
Expecting that the results all be 100% over that level, that seems to me to be calling for speculation.
Well, I respectfully disagree because it's an unknowable amount. So what we're going to say is we're not going to give this person any benefit of the doubt. We don't know whether, I mean, if it was 98%, we don't know. But I'm not asking the court to establish that. I think the district court can figure that out how they want to do it.
I agree. Could we go back to the Lockster Camp case, though? You're saying that this case is different, but it seems to me in Lockster Camp, the expert testified that it was not accurate to closer than 0.01% plus or minus. How is that really different than the confidence intervals that we're talking about here? Because it seems to me that's really a similar measure. And in Lockster Camp, the court ruled that the statute didn't require evidence of a concentration within a certain margin of error.
I think because, again, my interpretation is that Lockster Camp, again, is talking about admissibility. And I'm saying they don't have to meet that standard to get it into evidence.
No.
But we,
I'm sorry to interrupt,
in our
but,
challenge.
But I'm sorry to interrupt, but I mean, in Lockster Camp, the driver's evidence did come in. The district court relied on it to the benefit of the driver, and then the commissioner appealed. And I think it went to the merits of the revocation. And I apologize for interrupting, but I just want to make sure we're oriented to the right issue.
All right. The circumstance I would say there is that there was not, again, that called for speculation, where we have hard data now.
Saying that test result wasn't reliable in the same way you're saying it's not 100% knowable.
And I'm not, so I'm not saying it's not reliable. Okay, well, that's the difference, I think, is because I want
I'm
the
sorry,
court
let
know.
Me rephrase. The expert was saying that it's not accurate to closer than 0.01%, and you're saying the same thing. You're saying it's not that exact number. You're saying that there's a range, based a statistical range.
But I just think that this isn't a speculative concept. This is one that for this specific test and this specific testing device, we get to know that. We're not asking to speculate about what it could have been. In other words, if you say that margin for error stuff, we don't know. We're speculating that if we had a different test, he could have been below. But what we're saying here is on this specific test, here's the raw data. Judge, hear that evidence and decide it. So that's my time.
Thank you, Mr. Lucas. You will have an opportunity for rebuttal. Counsel for the commissioner.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Stephen Melchione, and I represent the Commissioner of Public Safety respondent in this matter. I think it's important to keep in mind that we are here on an evidentiary ruling from the district court. The appropriate standard is an abuse of discretion. And what I come back to is the Loxterkamp case. If it would be reversible error to rely on the evidence, how can it be an abuse of discretion to exclude the evidence? I think that's the bottom line for this case, because that's what happened in Loxterkamp. In Loxterkamp, the district court heard the evidence, and the expert said this test is not accurate, not that it's not admissible, but it's not accurate to within plus or minus 0.01. Would the testimony today, you know, almost 30 years later, be more precise? Yes. Would they say the range is 0.01627, whatever it happens to be for this particular average test result? It would be more precise, but it's essentially the same argument. This test is not accurate to within plus or minus. And what I always emphasize is it is a plus or minus. It's just as likely that the person's quote unquote true concentration is higher as it is lower. And if you look to the most recent cases, the McIntyre case and the Brazil case, those courts heard this exact evidence, the uncertainty evidence. They heard about the ranges at 95 and 99% confidence intervals. They heard about the probabilities that the true alcohol concentration, quote unquote, I'm sorry, I keep doing air quotes, but they heard about those, all that evidence. And what happened in those cases is this court decided in McIntyre that that testimony is largely identical to the margin of error evidence adduced 20 to 30 years ago, and relied on Dixon and Barna, which are our primary margin of error cases, in upholding the district court's decision to sustain the revocation. In Brazil, I think it's even more stark that this evidence is exactly what we're talking about here today. Because in Brazil, and I'm getting to the weeds for a second, but I think it's important. In Brazil, the two test results reported were 0.164 and 0.175. That's in the record in Brazil. Exhibit 1 in this case, the test result admitted by the court, shows test results of 0.168 and 0.181, higher than the Brazil test results, which would indicate an average for this case of 1.745. And if you look at the testimony in Brazil, the important analysis for uncertainty of measurement is what's your average result. In Brazil, it was 1.695, even lower than this case. So obviously, the margin in this case would be shifted even higher than in Brazil. And in Brazil, this court found that uncertainty of measurement was not something that had to be taken into account. And even though there was this margin of error, the state had still proved beyond a reasonable doubt that the alcohol concentration was essentially the reported value, 1.6.
Am I correct? In Brazil, there was no countervailing evidence by the defendant about uncertainty of measurement. It was just simply an argument on appeal about trying to raise a reasonable doubt on appeal.
No, in Brazil, the uncertainty of measurement was introduced. It was introduced by I believe it was Karen Kierzik from the BCA. And that is the I think the same expert they had in this case. It could have been Karen, or it could have been Aaron. It could have been one of the other analysts from the BCA. But that was identical. in Brazil. And in Brazil, the testimony on uncertainty was actually taken, which is how we know what those numbers are. And that was presented to the court. And what we see in McIntyre in Brazil, when the evidence is presented, it is essentially rejected as basically irrelevant in McIntyre, relying on Barna and Dixon. And if under Loxterkamp, it is incumbent upon the district court to, as a matter of law, reject this evidence. Why hear it? Why spend the time and resources to hear the evidence that under Loxterkamp, it is an error of law to rely on?
Well, why did Loxterkamp say that it's an error? Loxterkamp quoted Shulgin.
Yes.
Shulgin relied on Grund. Both of those are very short summary opinions without a whole lot of reasoning.
Correct. And Loxterkamp, Barna and Dixon, I think those three cases kind of create this nice little tight world of analysis for us. And they're relying on the implied consent statute. Because the implied consent statute revokes a driver's license based upon a test result, not a test result plus or minus. And even if you look at appellant's brief, appellant points to other states that have passed legislation saying that in those states, it's this test result plus or minus whatever it happens to be in that state. I think Iowa was the state cited in appellant's brief. The Minnesota legislature has chosen to identify an alcohol concentration, not plus or minus, but just to identify the relevant alcohol concentrations that result in revocations and enhancements. The legislature could certainly say, pick a different alcohol concentration, 0.07, 0.09, include the uncertainty of measurement. That is the legislature's discretion. But the legislature in our state has said 0.08 or 0.16 as the test result, and then it becomes incumbent. Sorry.
And what does the phrase mean, the test result, the test results, as used in that section, 0.52 sub 4A?
I think it means the test result as measured by an instrument approved by the BCA. And in this instance, the instrument has put out a specific test result. And the instrument doesn't use an uncertainty calculation. What the instrument does, I think it's well established in many cases, is it takes the lower result and it truncates down one digit. That's the methodology the BCA has approved. And we don't get to say a different methodology would be better. The BCA is giving the benefit of the doubt, and you can see it on this test result. It's a 1.6, even though one of the breath samples was a 1.81. So
appellant isn't arguing for a different methodology, I don't think. Appellant's arguing that the measurement of uncertainty be admitted into the record and considered.
But I think that would change the methodology, because the BCA's methodology for accounting for all these variances is to take the lower and truncate. What they're saying is we should take the average, calculate uncertainty, and if 100% of that range is above 1.6, then you can report a 1.6. Otherwise, you have to report a 1.5.
When you say truncate, what do you mean by that?
If you look at the test result in this case, it just means dropping the last digit.
Rounding so
a 1.64 becomes
right.
Always yeah. Rounding down. A 1.64 becomes a 1.6. A 1.68 becomes a 1.6.
That's what I thought, but it seemed in your initial argument you were relying to some extent on the fact that the two numbers here were higher than the two numbers in the other case. What if the two numbers here had been 1.61 and 1.61 for both tests?
And
it was rounded to 1.660. Well,
then the driver is getting certainly less benefit from the truncation, but still getting a benefit. And again, that is the methodology approved by the BCA. And if you look at the testimony in Brazil, when you're doing this uncertainty of measurement calculation, you have to take an entirely different approach. You have to look at both breath samples, take the average, and then do your statistical analysis based upon the average of the two breath samples. So, and the testimony in Brazil is also that the average of the two breath samples is the most likely true concentration for an individual. So in any case where the test result is reported at a 1.6, the average must necessarily be higher than a 1.6, because if any of the numbers were below a 1.6, it would be a 1.5 test result, because we always take the lower and truncate.
So go ahead, finish.
I was going to say, so long as the average is above a 1.6, the most likely result is the average of the two results. It's above a 1.6. That's what the Brazil court stated. That's what the testimony in the Brazil case was. But again, that's a criminal case, and that's a different standard than here. Because here, we're just looking at the test result as reported by the approved device using the BCA-approved procedure. And the BCA-approved procedure does not require an adjustment for uncertainty of measurement. It takes the lower and truncates.
So in statute 169.83 subdivision 3B10, it provides that the scope of the hearing is to cover the testing methods used. Was the testing method used valid and reliable, and were the test results accurately evaluated? In your view, is this evidence relevant to whether the test results were accurately evaluated?
No, I think that's what Loxterkamp stands for. And if you want to take the question then necessarily is, well, what is relevant, right? I think if you look at the Fritzky case cited by appellant uses that case and cites it to say, well, once the prima facie case is established, all of our expert testimony should come in because it's a question of fact. That's not true. In Fritzky, it was a question of fact because the issues there were that there was a potential medication that the petitioner was taking that would have affected the test, or that the machine was out of maintenance, that there was an interference, or that the machine had not been properly put through its BCA certifications. Those types of questions are fact issues. Put those before the court if you have them. But this statistical uncertainty of measurement is going to be the same in every case.
To drill down on Judge Cochran's question, in a case such as this, what evaluation was done? I mean, if we're trying to inquire whether the test results were accurately evaluated, what is the evaluation and who did it?
The machine did it. The machine evaluates the readings and determines the test result. To say that the result isn't accurately evaluated, you could raise various issues that we see in cases such as, you know, radio frequency interference, acetone interference, other medication interference. Those types of things affect or could affect, theoretically, the ability of the machine to evaluate the result. Our position would be if any of those problems existed, the machine would catch them and would not produce a numerical result. But we don't object. We don't file a motion.
Machine
eliminate.
Would catch medication?
If there was a non-alcohol substance that was interfering with the test, whether it be medication or diabetic acetone or ketone or paint fumes, the machine would catch those. But petitioners have, for decades, presented arguments that, you know, there was my client's a painter and paint fumes were affecting the test. We have expert hearings on those all day long. And that's not a problem. Those are legitimate fact questions for the district court. But what is happening here is the appellant is arguing that the BCA should use a different methodology within the machine itself for evaluating the result. And instead of taking the lower and truncating, they should do the uncertainty of measurement analysis and report something different. That's not the methodology that's been approved by the BCA or the legislature. If the legislature wanted to say you have to take into account uncertainty and you need 75% or 80% or 90% confidence intervals, all raising above 1/6 before you can report a 1/6, they can legislate that. But that's not what the legislature has done, and that's not the methodology that the BCA has employed.
You know, in the old days, and maybe my memory is bad because of my age, but I recall that when they were converting from, you know, breath converted to blood to just breath, what's the level in the breath, what's the level in the blood, what's the level in urine, that the breathalyzers of that generation or age were compensating or giving drivers a benefit of the doubt by really registering about 0.02 lower than a blood test would. Is that still built into this process, do you know?
And I can't speak to exactly what that methodology was, but in this case, the machines are all calibrated to read accurately.
But to read the breath, not the blood.
Right, but that's part of what happened when the legislature bifurcated the three different testing methods. They set a specific standard for each. Right. We're talking about grams per 210 liters of breath, or grams per 67 liters of urine, or a straight blood alcohol test. But there's different standards set for each, specifically to avoid the argument that, well, there's a true alcohol concentration, we don't know it, and it has to correlate to blood, otherwise you can't use the test. This was the Tanksley urine pooling argument that was decided a few years back, and this court said, no, you don't have to correlate the two. And that's essentially one of the things this argument comes down to, right, is there's a blood alcohol concentration, we don't know it, so we should take into account this uncertainty, even though that's not the approved methodology. Appellant is advocating for a different testing process, and that is beyond the purview of the district court. That's Loxterkamp, Barna,
Dixon. So when you say
Dixon.
Appellant is advocating for a different testing method, was that discussed before the district court in this motion?
I think it was, and that's been our argument all along in our motion in limine, is essentially when you're saying we need to take into account uncertainty, you're saying the way in which the machine reports the results should be different, or the way in which we evaluate the results should be different, when the statute just says the result of the breath test is a 0.08 or a 0.16 or more. And that testing methodology has been approved by the BCA. And this is precisely the issues raised in Barna and Dixon. The commissioner does not need to prove that we are above a 1.6 based upon some, if I can just finish this one.
Please do.
Answer. Barna and Dixon basically said the commissioner is not required to prove, to make their case, not required to prove above a 1.6 or above a 0.10, which was the standard back then. And that was an evidentiary standard. That was not admissibility. That was whether or not the commissioner made the case, the burden of persuasion.
I have a couple more questions. So the statute, 0.52 sub 4, the statute that governs the commissioner's obligation to revoke, it uses the plural referring to test results. Can you, do you know why? Do you have a position on why?
I don't have a position on why it uses the plural.
It refers to test in the singular, that the person submitted to a test and the test results indicate an alcohol concentration point.
I think that's a quirk of how we refer it. Even when it's a singular test, we say the results were...
Every test requires the driver to blow twice, right?
Yes.
I mean, does that mean that there's two results? I mean, there's, you know, and then they get evaluated or computed, and as you described?
That is certainly an interesting way to read it. I think that it's possible. I mean, the statute does require two separate breath tests and that they be evaluated by the device. So that is potentially one way to read it. That's a new one for me. I haven't exactly.
You said earlier that, I think in response to Judge Kirk's question about a hypothetical with 0.161 and 0.161, I'm envisioning that the further evaluation, I'm envisioning kind of a symmetrical bell curve about the range of possibilities, and you know, the width of the bell curve might indicate the precision or the confidence intervals and so on. You said it always is based on an average. So does that mean that, let's envision two hypotheticals. Let's say a 0.16 and a 0.160. And then second scenario, a 0.155 and a 0.165. Both scenarios have an average of 0.16. Do they really have identical bell curves thereafter, or might they be different for various reasons?
Assuming, based upon the testimony as we know it from Brazil and McIntyre, if the average is identical, the bell curve would be identical. And if you look at the testimony adduced in Brazil, it talks about the two results, the average. It talks about the average being the most likely result, which would be the peak of a bell curve. You know, your most likely result is always your mid-peak of a bell curve. Mm-hmm. And then about any potential other results being distributed symmetrically around that average, which is the bell curve you're talking
about. It
seems,
I don't know, I can't explain it very well, but my intuition is that two test results that vary more widely than usual might either might reduce the confidence intervals or might lead to a different result.
Assuming they're within range, because there is a range requirement for this machine, assuming they're within a specified range of each other, if they're outside of that range, the machine would say, bad agreement, do another test.
What is the range requirement? Where do we find it?
0.02. It's not in the record here, but that's what it is.
Is that in statute or rule?
I believe it's both in statute and in the BCA operating procedure for the DMT. But I believe, and I can certainly look that up.
No.
But it is a 0.02 agreement is the outside requirement. But again, it's one of those quirks of statistics that I'm not totally privy to.
Appears there's no further questions. Thank you for your argument. Mr. Lucas, you have an opportunity for rebuttal.
I just think it comes back to them keep saying that I'm trying to come up with a different methodology. It's what's approved by the BCA, the methodology of the BCA. And we're acting like the BCA's approach to things and to science is static and it never changes. Of course it evolves and it changes. So now we have information from the BCA built into these testing devices. Why wouldn't we want to know that? That's part of what the BCA does. They now make uncertainty of measurement calculations on every device, on every test. That's part of their methodology is what I would argue. And they tell you that right on the printout of the DMT. They say, if you want this information, it's available from the BCA.
Would you agree that in this case, I guess, well, is there anything in the record in this case to indicate that the commissioner sought out or obtained that information from the BCA before revoking?
I'm positive they did not.
Okay.
I'm positive they did not.
We can take that as an assumption. Yeah.
I'm positive of that. So that's what I come back to here is it's just that it's evolving technology and they're trying to make it so that the courts don't know. And I do submit that going back on these other cases that the state or that the respondent cites to, that they do come back to a speculation, that they speculate that the test result could have been lower. But the actual test result itself has to be, scientifically has to be, that uncertainty of measurement that the BCA calculates in this case, every case now. They didn't used to do it.
Counsel,
so it was
I
more
I understand
speculative.
Your point, but given that we're an error-correcting court, isn't your remedy really with the legislature and not with this court?
Well, I don't think so because I still go back to parentheses 10, 53, 10, that the judges are asked to evaluate whether the test results were accurately evaluated or not. And to just say, well, we're stuck with a printout. We just have a number because the state or the department gives us this number. I think that they need to hear that information.
Seems to me that this issue, if it were to arise in a criminal case, the analysis would be different.
It's really, this information comes into criminal cases all the time now. And people are doing that in the district courts. They're bringing in, you subpoena somebody from the BCA, they come in, they talk about that, and then the counsel argues to the jury that the jury can't convict beyond a reasonable doubt because this person's could have been under the limit.
And in your experience, district courts consistently or uniformly do not exclude the evidence in the criminal trial?
Speak of Hennepin, I know that a number of cases where a number of lawyers that have argued that, and sometimes they want not guilty verdicts, and sometimes they haven't, but depending on what the range was. But they're allowed
the
to at least analyze that. The evidence comes in, and the jury can evaluate the test results, which is what the statute tells us. And I think what was brought up earlier is that not every 1-6 is the same 1-6. And that's what you had brought up before. And that's what a judge needs to know. And they can know it. And I just don't see why they wouldn't want to know it. And I think that's the difference between some of the older cases and the actual technology now. This is the BCA. This is part of their protocol. This is part of what they do. So to say that I'm asking them to do something different,
when you say it's part of their protocol, I mean, I guess
they are now doing it.
It's part of their capabilities, but I mean, are you representing that they do it in every case? I mean,
they will do it if you just ask for that information. It's right on the printout that every driver gets that shows what their test result is. And it says right on there, if you want the uncertainty of measurement for this test, you can get it. Just go to this website. And they provide it in every single case.
And I guess I know we're going outside the record, but I guess, can you tell me, you've done that in other cases? Not this case, but you've seen that for another client, you've called up the BCA?
All the time. It's standard operating procedure.
And they say, and they're willingly,
council will agree with me on that.
And they willingly send it by mail or otherwise, and then right, and then you can
email.
Evaluate it, and then you can consider whether to explore that issue.
Yes, and I think that's what people were unsuccessfully arguing before. They were asking the BCA to do something they weren't already doing. Part of what they
and
do
and Loxterkamp, the defendant had his own expert. So
right,
and that evidence, the court still ruled that there wasn't a requirement to show that accuracy within a certain margin of error.
Okay, but I think what the state always comes back to is that the legislature has these laws and these rules, and the BCA is the ones who established the protocol. Well, the BCA decided recently. This wasn't when they brought in the data master. This didn't go the first few years. They decided that they should be able to have the technology to evaluate the uncertainty of measurement. So it goes back to, I believe, the BCA. And maybe that's the difference in Loxterkamp, is that some other outside person comes in and evaluates it differently, and the commissioner stands up and says, well, wait a minute, it's the BCA. They're the ones who established the methodology and the protocol. Well, it's part of their protocol now, and the judges should hear it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lucas. Thank you to both counsel for your excellent arguments. The court will take the matter under advisement and issue its written opinion within 90 days.